Welcome to the Stabbin' Stylists Podcast. I'm Randa.
And I'm Ashley.
We are just two stylists who love true crime and hair, and we're going to tell you about both.
This is a true crime podcast. These stories may be disturbing to some. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to episode 100 of the Stabbin' Stylist.
What is happening?
100. And fun fact to our viewers, I have this little thing. I test my episodes out with my clients.
You should be talking about them.
This one, I'll be like, hey, what do you know about the Trail of Tears? And people don't know how much of a part of the Trail of Tears Bradley County had. This was a very Cherokee area. And I think that's pretty apparent by like names of stuff, but I don't think people actually pay attention.
You are right.
This area is so rich with Cherokee culture. And we know that. We have Ocoee River.
The Ocoee.
A lot of Ootawah. I mean, a lot of towns are like Indian names, but people don't know the history of this area. So today, Charleston, Tennessee, is just a quiet little river town. It is a small town, very small. They have their own police department, but it's unincorporated. It's here in Bradley County, and it's between here and McMinn County.
Yes.
So long before Tennessee was even a thing, this whole thing, like we were saying, is Cherokee land. In all of the valleys surrounding the Hiawassee River were filled with Cherokee farms, council houses, trading posts, churches, all the things. So people know red clay, as you said. People know the historic marked places of the Cherokee, but that's not all they were.
No.
They literally lived in this area.
And why wouldn't you?
Right. We have so many natural resources here. So what is now Charleston, Cleveland, Calhoun, Benton, Polk County Mountains, Bradley County itself, that was all sitting directly inside the Cherokee Nation.
Yes.
This was the Cherokee Nation.
Yeah.
So.
Some may say that's the reason we have the Cherokee National Forest.
Yes. So, disclaimer. I wish people could see my hand going as I tell my stories. This is not a history podcast. This is a true crime podcast. I'm going to give you a background of what led up to the Trail of Tears, what led up to the Cherokee Removal Act.
The crime is the Cherokee Removal Act. I'll tell you that much.
Yes. I'm going to tie that all into Bradley County, Tennessee. This is kind of like a special.
Very much recognize that I own stolen land.
Yes, yes. And this is kind of a special little episode for Cleveland and the Bradley County people of Cleveland. We say that we started this podcast.
Hey, Big Dog, this county is soaked in blood.
Literally. And we say that we started this podcast to tell people that like bad things happen in Cleveland and that like this isn't just the Church of God. This like is a place and it has history too. And I don't know of a darker history than this. So I'm going to give you a background of the Cherokee people, the five civilized tribes, the Indian Removal Act, how we got here, all the things. Bear with me because I am not Cherokee myself, so I don't know how to say a lot of these things.
Yeah.
So some of these things, I will literally be pulling up Google Translate to be helping us in this. And once again, this is not a history podcast. So if you want more in-depth information on this, listen to a history podcast.
I'm sure there are plenty out there about this. And if there is not a history podcast on this, I can imagine the millions of books that have been written on this.
Yes.
So that's my disclaimer on this one. The Cherokee were one of the tribes later referred to as the Five Civilized Tribes.
Which in and of itself, there's problems with that.
Yes, don't like that. That was the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, Muscogee Creek, and the Seminole. And so the Cherokee, when people think Indians, you think what you've been taught in movies and stuff. But the Cherokee had their own written language. They had schools. They had a constitution. They had courts, businesses, newspapers, government.
They had towns.
Yes.
People think natives and they think, you know, teepees and riding around on horses and like picking everything up and moving like a very nomadic lifestyle. No, these people had towns. These people had villages. These people had sophisticated communities.
Yes.
With hierarchies and systems and trade.
And tradition.
Yeah.
I mean, these were people. These were
whole cultures.
Right. Very smart cultures.
Yeah.
They had thriving villages
all
around this area. All around this area. And I've always heard this my whole life.
And they were farming and they were raising livestock.
Yes. And you probably heard this your whole life too, that if there is an area around here, if you're near water, you're probably on Cherokee land.
Yes. Because water is life.
Right.
And they knew that.
Right. So they had all these communities. So they were thinking by the time the United States was becoming a thing, they're thinking that they had proved that they could coexist. We have our own government. We have our own thing going over here. We're good. We're not messing with y'all. So no reason for y'all to mess with us. Well,
wrong, because this is white man.
Yes. And in 1830, Congress passed the Indian Removal Act.
And hate it.
Over the next several years, they forced the removal of the five tribes. The Choctaw were the first to be removed, and that began in 1831. I'm not going to go into the stories of them being removed so much, because that's not what this story is about. This story is about the Cherokees.
But they are similar.
The Choctaw was the first, and they were in 1831. The Seminole removal began in 1832. The Creek removals was in 1834. And the Chickasaw began in 1837. So by the time the Cherokee removal started in 1838, this had been going on for about 7 years. More than 46,000 Native Americans were ultimately forced from the Southeast. That opened approximately 25 million acres of land to white settlement. And actually, out of that, people don't realize that more than 4,000 enslaved African Americans owned by tribal members were also forced west.
Yep.
This story will be about the Indian Removal Act. I'm going to kind of rewind a little bit and tell you about the actual Cherokee. Because I don't want this to just be the story of them being removed. I want this to be the story also about who they were and some major figures that were in this area. So what we now call Charleston began as Walker's Ferry, named after Major John Walker Sr. He was married to...
Isn't there a plaque on the bridge?
Probably.
I think so.
I know which one you're talking about, but I don't think I've ever really paid attention to it. But Major John Walker Sr. was married to Catherine Gahan, the daughter of Nancy Ward. So these were Chief Jack Walker's parents.
Now, Nancy Ward does absolutely have a grave.
Yes.
And marker, and it has her history on there.
And we're actually talking about her right now. So Nancy Ward, everybody around this area has heard Nancy Ward, but people don't necessarily know who she was. She held the title of beloved woman. And she was in one of the highest positions a Cherokee woman could achieve.
This title obviously gave her huge political influence, and she participated in councils, advised leaders, diplomatic, and she was literally one of the most respected figures out of the entire Cherokee history and their people. She never lived to see the Trail of Tears. She died in 1822 near present-day Benton, Tennessee, more than a decade before Fort Cass was built. But according to Cherokee oral traditions, Nancy Ward warned that a time would come when Cherokee people would be driven from their homeland by white soldiers. And stories have been passed down through generations that she used to describe visions of mothers carrying children, elderly people collapsing from exhaustion, and bodies left beside the road. And literally decades later, that became a complete reality in her hometown. Back to Walker's Ferry. Walker's Ferry became one of the most important crossings on the Hiwassee River and was actually a gateway to the Cherokee Nation. And so travelers, traders, missionaries, government officials, Cherokee citizens, like this was a major, this was their interstate.
This is how they were going back and forth.
Yes, this was a major thoroughfare.
This was where you crossed the river.
Right. And Walker's Ferry wasn't just the ferry, though. It was also Cherokee farms, fishing grounds, orchards, settlement. There was, you know, a whole, once again, community life there. And the Hiwassee River was such an important gateway to the Cherokee Nation that white settlers actually needed permission and passports to enter the Cherokee territory there.
I can't say that I blame them.
I didn't know that until I started looking into that. That's really interesting. But it was the major kind of corridor that the roads connected Cherokee settlements to what's now Georgia, the North Carolina, Alabama.
It was literally Cherokee roads.
Yes. And this was, that's where a lot of our roads come from now. Yeah. And I'll get into that later on. But a lot of our roads actually are like Cherokee Pass. But this was literally the capital of Cherokee Nation. This Radley County, Tennessee, Charleston, Tennessee was the Washington, D.C. of the Cherokees. This is the heartbeat of their nation was.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I don't think a lot of people realize is we didn't just have Cherokee here. We were Cherokee here. Mm-hmm. That's what this area was. By the early 1820s, the federal government established the Cherokee Agency near present-day Charleston. It served as the official headquarters for the relations between the United States and the Cherokee Nation.
Okay.
So not only was this the heartbeat of the Cherokee Nation, but this area was also the ones that were communicating with the U.S. government. Because essentially now there's two governments working in the same place, in the same area.
Yeah.
They had government offices, warehouses, blacksmith shops, stables, supply buildings, and actually housing for U.S. government federal officials because they were talking back and forth. So by the 1830s, the Cherokee Agency actually occupied dozens of acres along Cherokee River, and it was actually one of the busiest government U.S. government sites in the Cherokee territory also. Now, not only are the Cherokee and the Cherokee leaders and the Cherokee merchants and the Cherokee officials traveling all these roads, but now you have the U.S. officials and the U.S. merchants. Yeah. And now, so we've really got a...
And there's trade going in and out between the two, and there's negotiations happening, and there's...
Right.
This person's coming in, and this person's going out, and...
So now we have kind of two different government hubs
on the same spot,
in the exact same spot. Another really important person that was associated with the Cherokee people at the time in the region was not actually here in Cleveland, but was in Chattanooga and Hamilton County. And his name was Chief John Ross.
Okay.
He was born in 1790. He actually was not fully Cherokee. He had a Scottish father and a Cherokee mother, but he was raised Cherokee in the Cherokee community. And he became the principal chief of the Cherokee Nation and would actually be its most influential leader for decades. Before entering politics, he operating a trading post, a warehouse, and a ferry at Ross's Landing, the site of present-day Chattanooga's Ross's Landing. Mm-hmm. He was actually spent years and years and years fighting the Cherokee removal through petitions. And he was the one going to Congress and going to the Supreme Court, and he really was like a major, if not the most major, political movement against it for the Cherokee.
Yeah. He was the voice.
Yes. He was saying, we have every legal, moral right to be here. Like, yeah, this is our land.
Bro, we were here first.
Literally. So as pressure from the government started increasing, the Cherokee government had relocated to Red Clay in southern Bradley County. And from 1832 to 1838, Red Clay Historic National Park served as the capital of the Cherokee Nation East. The problem with that is, now Tennessee and Georgia and the federal government and the Cherokee were all claiming the same land as their territory.
Yeah.
The Cherokee leaders weren't exactly sure what to do about it, but not all of them agreed on how to handle it.
Yeah.
To where you had John Ross, who was, you know, the most opposed against the removal.
He said, get the fuck out.
Right. But a smaller group known as the Treaty Party believed that removal was inevitable and...
let's make the best deal we can.
Yeah, let's negotiate the best terms. Mm-hmm. This is where our story connects directly back to our Chief Jack Walker episode. Okay. So he came from one of the most influential families in the region. Not only was his dad Walker's fairy, but his mother-in-law was Nancy Ward. So yeah, from both sides, he's really got a lot of backing behind him. And he was deeply tied to the settlements in Bradley County, Polk County, you know, well known. But he actually became one of the most controversial leaders associated with the Treaty Party. He believed that eventually, either way, the government was going to take the land.
Okay.
They're going to get it either way, so let's do it. And these divisions really tore communities apart years before the Trail of Tears ever began. There was already a lot of... I mean, think of political parties now, yeah, and kind of the exact same thing, that they had very opposing views on how things should be handled. August 24th, 1834, he had attended a council meeting at Fort Morrow on the Federal Road in what is now Polk County. The issue of removal comes up again, and once again, he's arguing in favor for it. That evening, he was coming home on his horse along what is now present-day Benton Pike. And he was accompanied by a man named Dick Jackson, who was from Athens. As they approached a large chestnut tree along the side of the road, a gunshot rings out, and the bullet strikes Walker in the left chest. They carry him from down on Benton Pike to up where his home was, and he lived for 19 days. But on September 11th, 1834, he was buried behind his house before all of this even started. So, the year after he was...
But they had been watching other, tribes being removed at this point.
Yeah.
They knew about that.
Yeah, that had started because the treaty was actually signed 4 years before and the removal started three years before. So, they knew this was happening.
Right.
So, there's no... And go back and listen to the Chief Jack Walker episode, but people still aren't sure if he was killed by the two men that he busted bootlegging with. Yeah. Or not, they had a moonshine, still not bootlegging. They still don't know if that's why he was killed or if it had to do with the fact that he was such an outspoken leader for the Cherokee removal against the Cherokee. Could have been either way. All that to say, this didn't just happen.
No.
December 1835, a year after Chief Jack Walker is shot, which, loosely using the word chief, the Treaty Party signed the Treaty of Echota, which it surrendered all Cherokee land east of the Mississippi River, which was more than 7 million acres across Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, and North Carolina. In exchange, the United States agreed to pay $5 million, which the math is roughly that's $190 million today. They were going to provide land in present-day Oklahoma and cover certain relocation expenses.
I would love to point out how all of this very fertile river land was taken. But you can have this dirt lot out in Oklahoma.
Yeah. And I knew we would have this conversation. So I made sure to write down some facts about that. So there was more than 7 million acres that were ceded, right? $5 million worked out to be roughly 70 cents per acre in 1835, which in today's dollars, that's about $27 per acre.
I'm mad.
Yes. So obviously a very small minority of Cherokee leaders had even lined this, and actually more than 16,000 citizens, Cherokee citizens, signed petitions opposing the agreement. So the Cherokee did not want this.
Yeah, I don't think the National Council ever, like, they said, poo-poo, no. Mm-hmm. And then the U.S. government said, well, we're doing it anyway.
Well, despite overwhelming Cherokee opposition, the United States Senate ratified the treaty in 1836 by a single vote that set the stage for the forced removal of the Cherokee. Now, Bradley County had only been created in 1836, which was just 2 years before the Cherokee removal.
So it's brand new.
So it's brand new. When Bradley County was organized, Cleveland was, you know, the county seat. And it was just at this time a little frontier settlement. There was no railroads, no downtown square.
There's nothing, no mill. There's no.
Right. Yeah. Nothing that we're seeing down there now that we're thinking is old. It's not this old yet. This is back when buildings were still wooden. So
every trail was dirt.
Right. And that had just been part of the Cherokee Nation just a few years earlier. The valley surrounding Mouse Creek, Candy's Creek, Chatta, Chestui, and the Hiwassee River were all big communities of the Cherokee. These were all little different towns, communities.
That aren't suddenly empty.
To fast forward a little bit to what's going to be next to us in the story, is there was, you know, an influx of soldiers, government officials, contractors, merchants, settlers. All this kind of stuff started bringing a lot of activity to the Bradley County and Cleveland area. And the first very pretty Bradley County courthouse was being built at the same time that Fort Cass was operating nearby. So let's get to Fort Cass.
When you say fort, do we know what it looked like? Was it like logs?
Yes.
Was it rocks? What were it? What a, if you will.
It was so big that it was a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Fort Cass takes up like 30 square acres.
Uh-huh.
It's huge.
It's a big one.
Yes. As Cleveland is building, that kind of goes back to, you know, a lot of these modern roads and transportation corridors that they're following are following Cherokee trading paths and roads. A lot of our roads today come from these routes, from the Cherokee routes.
Yeah.
So as Cleveland's being built, Red Clay is only about 12 miles from downtown Cleveland for people that aren't from here.
As a crow flies.
So while the Cherokee leaders were talking about, hey, you know, this removal's coming in, the U.S. government's coming on them, at the same time they are having these meetings, they're having meetings for Cleveland and establishing governments and establishing it as its own town. So the parallel between these two stories is what really fascinated me and like drew me to this whole thing. Then come 1838. The Indian Removal Act had been going on for about 8 years now. In May 1838 was the beginning of the forced removal of the Cherokee people. General Winfield Scott arrived in the Cherokee agency, and upon arriving in the Cherokee country, he issued a proclamation warning the Cherokee that resistance would be met by overwhelming military force.
Lovely.
Nearly 7,000 federal troops, state militia, and volunteers participated in the roundup.
We are the volunteer state.
Many Cherokee later recalled soldiers appearing suddenly at their home and giving them only moments to gather belongings before marching them away.
I'd be pissed in hell.
Scott selected the Cherokee agency as his headquarters because it already sat in the center of Cherokee's national transportation network. Major roads from Georgia, Alabama, North Carolina, and East Tennessee converged there, and those were the roads that they used to go remove the Cherokees.
Shocking.
The Hiwassee River provided access to river transportation, so warehouses, supply buildings, government offices, and existing infrastructure were already there. So the military headquarters that was already there was established as Fort Cass in present-day Charleston, Tennessee. And it was not just one fort. It was an enormous military complex covering miles of Bradley County. So they used the Cherokee Agency, which was once a center of diplomacy and trade, into a command center for the Cherokee removal operations through the Southeast. So literally where the Cherokee leaders had negotiated with the United States is the headquarters for where they were going to be removed from their homeland. So this was not just a fort. It was not just a military base. This was internment camps.
Yes.
These camps stretched through the valleys between Cleveland and Charleston, including Mouse Creek, Chatta, Chestooey, Bedwell Springs, Candy's Creek, and Rattlesnake Springs.
Rattlesnake Springs sounds a little questionable to me. I don't know that I would want to be there.
Military posts known as Camp Foster and Camp Worth were established near Rattlesnake Springs. These are all in Bradley County. And if you notice, all those places that I just said was where they were putting internment camps were the exact same places that I just told you a few minutes ago is where the Cherokee communities were living.
Yeah.
They literally took over their communities, forced them out of their homes, and made them into internment camps. And this is where it gets rough and bad and worse. So historians estimate that Fort Cass detention system covered nearly 30 square miles across Bradley County, making it one of the largest Native American internment systems in United States history. By July...
So they just Auschwitz everybody. They just moved them all to one place.
Well, there's a couple different camps, and I'll tell you where all of those are.
But the fort was the big one.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
That started in May 1838.
Okay.
By July 1838, more than 4,800 Cherokee prisoners were being held in camps surrounding Fort Cass.
Casual.
Military records documented that approximately 1,600 Cherokee prisoners were at Mouse Creek Camp, 870 at another Mouse Creek Camp, 1,300 at Chestooey, 900 at Bedwell Springs, 600 at Rattlesnake Springs, and hundreds more at Chatta, Candy's Creek, and smaller camps that they had set up through the area. For those here in town, some of these names are familiar, some of them are not. So, the Mouse Creek camps were located in present-day Cleveland on literally Mouse Creek, where Mouse Creek Road is. The Chatta camps were out near Chatta Valley, northeast Cleveland.
Oh, the golf course.
Yes. The Chestooey camps were located near Chestooey Creek, northwest Cleveland, 64 area.
Okay.
And obviously the Candy's Creek camps were along the creek corridor in northern Bradley County. The Rattlesnake Spring camp. I had never heard of this until I started doing this. The Rattlesnake Spring, Camp Foster, and Camp Worth were located northeast of Cleveland near the spring that still exists today.
Where's it at?
Look it up real quick.
Where the hell is my phone?
I got it.
Is it still called Rattlesnake
Spring? Yeah. Rattlesnake Spring is off of Dry Valley Road. The historic Me House is out there. Anyone in Cleveland, it is right past the jet port. Rattlesnake Spring is not far
Spring is close to Chatta Valley.
Well, and it's very close to Hiwassee, too. So, Rattlesnake Springs, Camp Foster, and Camp Worth were all near each other. So, the removal operation wasn't just these forts. These are just the ones here in town that we are living with every day and don't realize. There were also more in Polk County, and it had Fort Marr, which is near present-day Bend, and it served as several military posts during the Cherokee Roundup. And located near the entrance to the mountain passing from North Carolina and Georgia, that fort occupied a strategic position into Cherokee County because that's where you're having to go through to get to Georgia in North Carolina. So I'm guessing that one was following the Ocoee River, not the Hiwassee River. So as these families were being captured, they were funneling them into these smaller camps than into Fort Cass, because Fort Cass was the final pass through to start the journey. And people reported being dragged from their homes while they were eating breakfast. Some were asleep. Mothers were carrying infants. They were literally given only minutes to gather what they could and to leave. And most of those homes were looted immediately.
Yeah.
After the families were taken away. So some Cherokee fled into the mountains of Polk County in North Carolina, trying to hide from the soldiers, but thousands were still captured. And Fort Cass became the largest Cherokee detentional site during the removal operations. So in the summer of 1838, thousands of Cherokee people were trapped in these camps. They became horribly overcrowded. Disease started rapidly spreading. Dysentery, measles, fever, whooping cough, like it does. All of them. So then, of course, the water supply became contaminated. So then the food ran short. So then the human waste starts piling up. And they, witnesses literally said, like soldier witnesses, said that over just the entire valley, all you could smell was just sickness and death. Because, I mean, you've got to think, all these little camps are a few miles apart, spread all over.
Yeah.
So that's all you can really smell in the whole area is just
awful
sadness. So these camps are horrible. Missionaries, soldiers, and even survivors write about how horrible it was inside, how, you know, children died, women gave birth, elderly prisoners collapsed. A lot of people in Bradley County died before they ever even took a step on the Trail of Tears, and they were all just buried in unmarked graves.
Just thrown in a hole.
Yeah, most of them mass graves. So,
Jesus Christ.
To make that situation even worse, there was a drought that summer.
Oh, God.
So the Tennessee River system became too shallow for transport boats to come in, which just so even more so delayed removal plans and trapped them inside of these camps for many more months than they were even supposed to be. So by the time they ever even started what is known as the Trail of Tears, they were weakened, they were starved, they were diseased, they were dehydrated, they had been in the elements, they had given up.
You know.
Yes. Thousands of miles.
Thousands of miles. We'll just let them stop for a little while, but then we'll get them back up.
And make them carry their dead. At Rattlesnake Springs alone, historians believe that more than 200 Cherokee died due to the horrific camp conditions. By the late summer and the fall of 1838, detachments of Cherokee prisoners began leaving Fort Cass continuously. So this is when they're starting to march them out west. Wagon trains and marching groups move west through Charleston, across Tennessee, and towards river crossings such as Blythe Ferry here in Cleveland, Tennessee. Some went northwest through Tennessee and Kentucky. Some traveled through Alabama and some through Arkansas. So there was more than one. Yeah. There's a couple different books and things that show different maps. But there was so many being moved out that obviously they don't know all the the trails. But there was more than one, just more than
we
one
know
trail.
It was documented.
Right. So after reaching the Indian Territory in what's present-day Oklahoma, John Ross actually helped rebuild the Cherokee Nation, but this had cost him everything. During the Trail of Tears, because he was on the Trail of Tears, his wife became seriously ill. And according to accounts, she died near what's now present-day Little Rock, Arkansas. And he remained by her side as she grew weaker and held her as she died. And after years of fighting for the removal, once he got back to the Indian Territory, he completely devoted himself to rebuilding what had been destroyed. He helped restore the Cherokee government, reopen schools, establish courts, and create stability for the thousands of families that had been moved out there. And obviously the Cherokee Nation had been torn apart before the removal or even after, you know, getting West. And so he...
Oh, we won't even... The treatment of all tribes once they got to their territories is still insane.
That's a whole episode in itself.
Yeah.
But just alone... And you've got to think... He also really helped with unification because these people were jerked out of their homes. So, you know, Chatta Valley Camp and Rattlesnake Springs could have been so close that we live in the same household, but they take one of us to one and one of us to the other. Right. So literally people know about the Holocaust, and this is what this was.
This is the American Holocaust.
Yes, this is before the Holocaust, and people know about the Trail of Tears. And you've learned about it, but even living in Bradley County, Tennessee, where this started.
I don't think you can understand the magnitude of the suffering.
No. And not just that. They teach you about the Trail of Tears, but they don't tell you. This is
the hub.
This is it. This is where it fucking started.
For the Cherokee people, this is it.
Yes. If you listen to our Jack Walker episode, you hear me say that the Lost Dutch Colony in Polk County, my family were some of the first families to move in on stolen land from the Cherokees. So back to John Ross. He actually served as the principal chief for decades, and he did until 1866 in his death. So he was in the removal in 1838 and ended up living almost 30 years after.
Damn.
So not every Cherokee was removed. Most of them were. But some families successfully hid in the mountains in North Carolina, East Tennessee, North Georgia, and they waited until the soldiers left before, you know, they came back out. And some people, not many, did escape from the journey out west. And a small number were able to remain through intermarriage, marrying white people, private land over ownership, and just legal exemptions that allowed them, which legal exemptions honestly probably means you were what they called half-breed.
Yeah.
But even then...
You're a little white, so you can stay.
But even then, John Ross's dad was Scottish. He wasn't fully Cherokee. Mm-mm. But I don't think he would have ever left his people.
Yeah, I think it was more of a loyalty thing for him.
Right. So the descendants of the people who stayed behind, were able to hide, were able to stay here, is now known the Eastern Band of the Cherokee and Indians. And there's still many families through East Tennessee, Western North Carolina, Monroe County, Polk County, and the surrounding areas that can trace their
lineage
back to the people who survived. Thousands of people died during the removal itself, but the effects of Fort Cass did not end when they left Bradley County. Almost immediately after they were removed, the land they left behind was open to white settlements. Cherokee farms, ferries, roads, and businesses disappeared as rapidly expanding communities that would now become the modern Bradley County took over. We took over their roads, we took over their farms, we took over their land. Charleston continued to grow around the Hiwassee River crossing, and Cleveland expanded from a small settlement into the county seats and eventually became one of the largest cities in Southeast Tennessee. By the end of the late 19th century, it had really been transformed. The stockades were dismantled. The temporary military structures vanished. Fields were plowed. Roads were rerouted and taken over. And a lot of people forgot Fort Cass ever existed. A lot of people now don't know Fort Cass ever existed. But the history never completely disappeared. Rattlesnake Springs remains one of the most important surviving sites connected to the Cherokee removal. Red Clay.
I gotta go now.
Yeah, we need to go out there. I'd never heard of it until I started
Red Clay. I grew up playing at Red Clay, so I know a lot. I've been to the powwows there.
Red Clay is remembered as the final capital, and like she said, there's a lot still going on there.
They have a great little museum, beautiful gift shop, lovely spring water. It's a good time.
And in Charleston, there is the Hiwassee River Heritage Center in Charleston. And it sits near the location of the former Cherokee Agency and Fort Cass headquarters right on the river. It interprets Cherokee history, the Trail of Tears, Fort Cass, the Cherokee Agency, and Civil War history of the region. The facility contains exhibits, maps, historical panels, all kinds of stuff from the removal of 1838. And it was designated by the National Park Service as the official interpretive site of the Trail of Tears National Historic Trail. There's also Red Clay and the Cherokee Heritage Center in Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
So they're trying to preserve some of those areas, but it's just, people do not realize that this was a thing. People do not realize this is our heritage.
Mm-mm.
Before we were here, this was Cleveland, Tennessee. This is what happened.
Ain't got a clue.
So, like I said, this is not a history podcast, but...
close enough.
Yes. Go visit the Heritage Center. They do, just like Red Clay, they do all kinds of events. Red Clay mm-hmm. does all kinds of events. Research maps. Take your weekends and go research these areas.
Go explore.
Yeah. Yeah. Learn
some things.
Yeah.
Get a little perspective.
Oh my God, episode 100. That's hard to believe.
What? Don't whistle in the woods at night.
Bye, y'all.